Welcome to this new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast by RFI English. I'm Melissa Shemam. Twice a month, this podcast looks at one major issue on the continent, one country or one idea at a time. This week, we focus on Chinese-African-Western relations. September has seen lots of meetings, events and summits to discuss trade and investment in Africa. The United States is investing in building nuclear plants in Ghana and Kenya, for instance. And the China-Africa Forum at the beginning of September produced new agreements between China and African nations on areas ranging from industry and agriculture to natural resources and renewable energy. The Chinese leader Xi Jinping said that Beijing would allocate $50 billion to the continent over the next 3 years. But overall, China's investment in Africa have been lower in the past year, and the US and Europe are interested in coming back to Africa economically. So, what does Africa really need? To talk about it, my colleague Jan van der Meijden and I spoke to experts. First, we hear from Daniel Large. He's an associate professor at Central Europe University. His interests are in politics of development, Africa's relation with China and India, and the global south in general. He explained to Jan the importance of the recent FOCAC, the Forum on Africa-China Cooperation, and how African-Chinese relations evolved in the past few years, including the COVID pandemic period.
There are officially four high-level meetings around the key themes for this FOCAC. The first is called state governance. The second is industry and agriculture. Peace and security will likely be a prominent high-level meeting. And then, of course, the Belt and Road Initiative. So this is the first fairly prominent major summit event for China since COVID. So from the Chinese perspective, there are various policy and political goals that they'll seek to promote at FOCAC. From different African perspectives, likewise, they'll be keen to promote their agenda to follow up on the last FOCAC meeting in 2021, but also look ahead to the next 3 years. This FOCAC in 2024, which is the ninth to be held, has attracted much less general media or popular excitement across large parts of the African continent than in the past. This may speak to the very changed circumstances, expectations about the continuation of large Chinese financing for development schemes have been greatly lowered in recent years due to what's been happening in China's domestic economy, as well as global events and challenges facing African economies as well.
Yeah, the last FOCAC in 2021 issued a Dakar action plan involving, among other things, Chinese imports of some $300 billion US dollar. Whatever came from that plan, and how do you think it will be followed up?
FOCAC is usually very good at declaratory statements, often ambitious goals and agenda setting. It's less good at actually matching these with concrete evidence about actual achievements. There's often a gap between what's promised and then what's achieved, or we don't know how the two match together. So at the last FOCAC, there were very specific commitments across a range of areas. There remain a number of black boxes about various areas of cooperation that we simply don't know enough about to be able to answer your question properly, I'm afraid.
Now, let's go back a bit to the origins of FOCAC. It was created in 2000 under then Chinese President Jiang Zemin and his successor, Hu Jintao. What was the rationale at that time?
The rationale was really proceeded on the back of a rekindling of China's Africa relations after the Tiananmen Square massacre in 1989, an effort to formalize, to institutionalize cooperation going forward. So the context is very much of relations that had evolved in the 1980s when China was preoccupied with its domestic economic development and reform. And China's Africa engagement in the 1980s continued, but at a much reduced level than previous decades. Things begin to change after 1999 in political terms when the Chinese government looks to African states for political support. But things also begin to change, importantly, of course, in economic terms when the economic ties between China and Africa really begin to grow and then to take off over the 1990s, which is often the forgotten decade in terms of China's economic relations with Africa, but really sets the scene for the creation of FOCAC in 2000. At the same time, despite these economic drivers, because of China's increasing domestic demand to power its economic growth over the 1990s, but also the interest of African exporting states to find new markets, China also trying to go global with its business activities as well to help its companies acquire new markets, including in Africa and then beyond. At the same time as this economic agenda, there's also a political agenda when President Jiang Zemin visited the then Organization for African Unity in Addis Ababa in 1996 as part of a multi-African state tour. He was very clear that not only did China and Africa have economic shared interests, but they also had shared political interests as well. So that also informed the creation of FOCAC in 2000. But I will say that FOCAC in 2000 is very different from FOCAC in 2024, in the sense that FOCAC 2000 was predominantly organized around an economic and political agenda, with some aspects added, such as, for example, people-to-people exchanges or culture. But the menu for cooperation was much more limited compared to today, which is genuinely comprehensive, genuinely full spectrum, virtually any area you can think of. It's part of the FOCAC cooperation process. Furthermore, FOCAC has evolved from a China-Africa forum, narrowly conceived, to now involve not just the UN Secretary General, but also representatives of other international organizations or interested parties as well. So the range of actors participating has also diversified at the same time as the actual menu of cooperation has diversified. Perhaps it might be worth also mentioning that in 2000, China was a very different country under a very different leadership at a very different time in world politics as well. So in 2024 and going forward, FOCAC is taking place in a very different geopolitical context, clearly, in which the stakes are higher, particularly for questions around China's global cooperation with Africa and what this means in a changing world order.
One issue that is of high importance for Africans is to get trade and relations to be more balanced and less controlling from China, as well as from the US and former European colonial powers. On that note, here is what the history professor at King's College in London and China specialist Michael Dillon had to say.
As the Americans did when they first became a world power, China is trying to say that it's not behaving like a colonial power. China did support the anti-colonial resistance and liberation movements in Africa. When Chinese companies started going into Africa, they really were behaving in many ways the same way that Americans and British and other European powers did behave in Africa. It's almost as if it's impossible to get out of that colonial type of relationship when you are going in with superior technology and superior financial backing.
Regarding Africa's relation with the US and Europe, Daniel Large thinks that the US election in November will be a game changer. Here he is with Jan van der Meijden again.
The timing is fascinating from an African perspective in terms of the current state of global politics, particularly in terms of what I think, I mean, the EU matters, don't get me wrong, but I think the defining characteristic today is strategic competition between America and China, how Africa fits in, and then, as you say, how Africa in turn deals with the EU and other key prominent external partners as well. First of all, the timing of this FOCAC is fascinating partly because it comes not long, of course, before the next US presidential elections. So I think that's one dynamic to note. I mean, Africa, as far as I can tell, hasn't really featured in US electoral politics to date, even though US-Africa strategy under President Biden, I think, has by and large been much improved on the previous Trump administration, at least, which is not saying much, but is something to note. America had a US-Africa leader summit in December 2022, as you know. So how global US-China competition affects Africa is one key theme. What this FOCAC will set in terms of an agenda next 3 years and how that relates to what happens in the US presidential elections and the future of US strategy for Africa, whether under a possible future President Harris or a possible future President Trump again. There are a number of Chinese strategic goals about its competition with America that it seeks to use Africa for in multilateral and UN settings and other settings as well, of course. But that's the big picture story. The second point, though, I would note is that for me, we rightly put China at the center of this story. But I think from the perspective of African states, regions, the continent, the AU Commission, it's important to also put them, you know, central state, as it were. So in this talk about a new type of Cold War in Africa involving not just China and America, but many other powers, you mentioned Wagner, Russia is obviously prominent as well. Generally speaking, African leaders are very, very wary of becoming trapped in a new type of Cold War scenario. They just don't want that. The key mantra has been not taking sides. And there are good reasons why most African states don't want to take sides. So the new agenda in which the European Union is part is efforts by African states to diversify options for external partnerships. That is to do business with everyone, but not to be owned by any one external power, and instead to try to pursue their own more independent agenda. So if you're President Ruto of Kenya, for example, you want extra money to extend Kenya's standard Chinese-built standard gauge railway. But African leaders know that China is no longer the only show in town, as it were, compared to 2000, in economic terms, at least. They have many other options. And perhaps it's that recognition that emboldens them to try to exert their own leverage over China, to do bargains, as they would do in their relations with the European Union. Perhaps one of, despite there'll be a lot of talk about China and the global south, you mentioned Ukraine, there's Gaza, there are all sorts of shifting geopolitical trends. But there's no doubt that one of them involves the ascent of Africa in geopolitical terms. But how far African leaders will be able to embrace choice and use it positively for genuinely developmental benefit does remain to be seen, because it's much easier said than done.
Finally, to try and understand the expectations from young Africans from both the West and China, I spoke to the director of the Itchikovich Foundation in Johannesburg after they released a survey with young people from all over the continent. According to Igor Itchikovich, there is room for all partners in Africa, but their attitudes toward Africans need to be the key.
One of the key objectives of the survey was to understand foreign influence on the continent. And what is becoming clearer and clearer is that Africa is absolutely a proxy battleground between China, the United States, Europe, and Russia. It is an economic battleground. It's a battleground for influence. It's a battleground for markets. The African youth in the next decade is going to become the biggest consumer population in the world. And whoever owns the hearts and minds of that consumer population is going to have a massive economic advantage. So the survey this year tells us that the United States, and let's call it Western culture through the eyes of the United States, still is very dominant in Africa. But from a commercial and economic and investment perspective, China has absolutely trumped the West at every single level. And the reason for that is that Chinese investment in Africa is visible. It's tangible. It touches the lives of every young African. The Chinese have invested in roads. They've invested in sports stadiums. They've invested in telecommunications infrastructure that touches their lives every single day. And there's a perception that Western investment in Africa is absent, or that Western investment in Africa is in things that are not automatically visible. And in my view, the vacuum that is created by a lack of investment by the United States and by the perhaps differently placed investment by Europe is giving China this massive advantage. I also believe that the African youth do see Chinese investment in a very balanced way. They understand that a lot of that investment is in return for access to African minerals, metals, and commodities, which don't add value to their economies. So there still remains a huge opportunity for the West to make up this lost ground. But they have to do something about it fast, because while the West is talking about investment in Africa, China is maxing it out in a big way.
Definitely. So would you agree to say that in terms of soft power, that the West is still seen positively by most Africans?
This is not a lost cause by any manner of means. 79% of the people we survey see the United States as having positive influence in Africa. Europe is at a much lower level, but still seen very positively. China and Russia, however, are gaining year on year, and that is because of the visible investment. So there's no question that there is a massive opportunity for the West to fill that vacuum and to start at least balancing the Russian and Chinese influence. Now, the Russians and the Chinese are not only making investments, but they're also running aggressive, very well-managed campaigns to further their interests on the continent. And it is part of the challenge, and part of what the West has to do is to back their investment with the right social media, public relations, communications campaign to make sure that those investments are celebrated and that they are also put in the right places. This is not a time to be giving up to Russian and Chinese dominance. It's a time to be balancing it. The African continent needs huge investment. There's enough place for everybody. There's opportunity for everybody. Africans want to be friends with everybody. This whole campaign to polarize the continent is not working nearly as well as the Russians or the Chinese would want it to work.
This was the latest episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast produced by RFI English. It was mixed by our sound engineer, Erwan Rome. Thanks, Erwan. And thanks to you for listening. We'll be back soon to comment on African affairs. In the meantime, for more African and French news, go to our website, rfi.fr/en.